Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Koonsman, toddler expert and the founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and to empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture the little one's development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am so excited to be here with Dr. Rehm, licensed clinical psychologist. Welcome, Dr. Rehm.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you again this year. And there might be some people joining us that have not joined in the past and may not know about you and your work. So could you tell us a little bit more before we dive in?
Yes. Yep. So I am Dr. Ashreena Rehm. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, as you mentioned, and I specialize in perinatal mental health. I'm based in Arizona, but I have been a psychologist for a little over a decade and really made a big transition in my career working primarily with parents when I became a parent myself. So about 6 years ago, I noticed that there was a big gap and a huge need for supporting parents primarily for their big emotions and all of the transitions and issues that they were going through. And it really made a big shift in my career. And I've never looked back. So I love this work and I love supporting parents and their families because I think that I, as myself as a psychologist, walking through this parenting transition and struggling so much, I thought, okay, if I have the knowledge of the psychology background and I'm still struggling, how many parents out there feel the same? So that's why I do what I do.
Well, I am so thrilled that you do what you do because you are out there changing lives and helping us all. And today we're talking about parenting rage. And, you know, as parents, even caregivers, you know, you think taking care of a kiddo is going to look one way. Mm. And then it looks a completely different way. And yes. A lot of frustration and anger and discontent can show up when what we expect doesn't look like reality. And this intense anger, frustration, and rage can really start to bubble up. So to start us off, can you talk a little bit about how you define parenting rage and how common this is?
Mm-hmm. This is actually a really common experience. I'm glad we're talking about it because it's something that we don't want to talk about. You know, when it comes to feeling angry or rage filled, a lot of shame surrounds these feelings. We don't want to talk about it and say like, yes, I lost it on my children or my partner or whomever is in our presence. But how this comes to be is this actually can start during pregnancy, that some of the moms that I meet with particularly will say, I was starting to feel more irritable or annoyed. And I was finding I was getting really frustrated fairly regularly during my pregnancy. And this can persist postpartum and it can persist for even years postpartum if it's not addressed. And what this looks like is this anger or rage that feels out of proportion for the trigger. And it's out of character for you as a person. Maybe you think back to yourself pre-pregnancy and you're like, well, I don't really think of myself as an angry person. I wasn't angry. I didn't get frustrated. I didn't let the little things bother me. And now here I am and I'm snapping at the littlest things. Maybe my partner left something on the sink and that really upset me. Or maybe my child isn't going down for a nap and it is triggering something in me that I feel like I cannot ignore. And I'm just getting increasingly angry. So it's out of proportion. And you wouldn't have responded to that maybe the same way pre-pregnancy. And it can be a range of emotions. We think of it from just a minor annoyance or irritation, and it can range until this, you know, anger, rage, or even fury.
Yeah, thank you for defining this. First of all, thanks for helping normalize it because you're right. It's something that a lot of times we don't want to talk about, that we can feel really alone in. We can think, is there something wrong with us? Or like, why am I doing this? Is there something wrong with me? You know, things like this. And so when we define it as something that is out of proportion to the trigger, it helps us like understand, okay, yes, this is out of proportion and this is common, and it doesn't mean that you're broken and you don't have to be alone in this, because it's actually something that comes up for a lot of us. And I know that sometimes parents might not even feel this until the toddler years, because there's a very big shift that happens from infancy to toddlerhood, or maybe they felt it some in infancy, but then it really ramped up in toddlerhood, because there's this big shift from a baby generally going along, going with the flow of our lives, to a little human who's trying to become their own person. So all of a sudden they're trying to set boundaries to delineate the line between me and you. So they're saying no, they have their own agenda, and that can be really frustrating. And so what do you feel makes toddlerhood just a challenging developmental period when it comes to us as parents and caregivers navigating our own big emotions?
I think you really highlighted a big piece of that, and it's the pushing of the boundaries that we can sense and that we feel. So it's our kids starting to challenge whatever it is, that, whatever boundary that we say. So them saying no, them not cooperating when we want them to, being in a rush. But there's a number of other things that are also at play when we think about what makes toddlerhood challenging. Some of the big pieces I can think of that come up regularly in the sessions with the parents that I meet with is that it often brings to the surface a lot of our own upbringing, a lot of our own challenges that we had growing up. And I can think of this from the perspective of what was expected of me as a child. And, you know, if you grew up in a system, for example, where children were to be seen and not heard, or children were to be, you know, disciplined a certain way, and now your child is pushing those limits and those boundaries, and you're having a hard time, because it's bringing rise to your own feelings where you're like, well, hey, this is violating the rules I know of child rearing. I wasn't allowed to do that. I know my parents wouldn't have accepted that. And it's like you are reworking the system and the rules, so it feels really foreign. That's one piece that's pretty big. But like you said, the boundaries. But toddlers, some of them are still not sleeping. They're not cooperating. They are pushing every limit and button. They are overstimulating, right? They are loud. They have a need for our attention, for our physical touch. And it is putting our system in overdrive. And you think of it from that perspective. If I'm not sleeping now, I'm already at a limited capacity. I'm already, my bandwidth is already stretched thin because I'm not sleeping. That already is going to activate the centers of our brain that for aggression and anger. Now you add, I'm overstimulated because toddlers are overstimulating, and I need space, but they're not giving me space, and they don't desire space. They want to be all up in our space. And then now I add the other layer of they're pushing boundaries, and I am trying to parent in a way that's different than my parents or my upbringing. So there's so many layers to this that makes it really challenging. And I want to say this, like, of course you're going to have big feelings as a parent. Of course you're going to feel frustrated and angry. You are managing something you've never managed before, and it feels impossible because sometimes it truly is. There's no way around what you're going through other than to try to regulate yourself. It's just going to be really hard. So I want to say you're not alone. And this is a struggle that comes up in nearly every single session, every parent I've ever met with.
Thanks for reminding us of that. Like, we yeah. all need to hear this. We all need to hear this. So what would you say is really like at the root of parenting anger? Like what's the thing that you really see at the root there?
Yes. So anger can show up in a number of ways, and you may have heard this before, but anger can show up as a primary emotion as well as a secondary emotion. We think of it as like anger is a primary emotion. Somebody comes up and, you know, punches you, you're going to feel angry. it's primary. You're like this primal response to retaliate, you're angry and you need to protect yourself. But anger also shows up as a secondary emotion. And most often this is how it shows up, particularly in parenthood. And what that means is it's a feeling about a feeling. It is masking some other feeling. It's there to protect us from something that's really vulnerable and scary that we don't like to access. And that's why you'll see people that really go to anger, but you know that maybe they're not angry. Maybe they're feeling scared. There's something else going on. I think of it like an iceberg. I was like always using the Titanic example. you saw the tip of the iceberg, and at the tip, we see anger. We see our behavior, right? We see us yelling. We see us lashing out or maybe slamming a door. But underneath that, we're feeling unheard, unseen. We're feeling inadequate. We're feeling tired. There's just a number of emotions that anger is there to protect because accessing it feels really vulnerable and scary. So it's a feeling about a feeling. And it's usually when we think about this from the perspective of parenthood, it's an unmet need. So there's something there. We have this need. It's gone on for so long, and we just explode. That's what we see. So at the root of parenting rage is what we find is it's covering something really vulnerable, and it's also a response to unmet needs. So anger is this signal that's saying like, hey, pay attention to me. Don't ignore me. This is really important. And often we feel ashamed of it, but anger is there for a reason. It's saying we are wronged. We're hurt. We have something going on that we need help with. So don't ignore it when you're noticing the rise of anger in your body and as a, like a feeling that's coming up for you.
Yeah. This idea of, you know, thinking I hear you talking about a really great mindset shift as, you know, thinking about this anger as like something bad or a problem versus like, oh, this is a signal. This is my body, my mind telling me, hey, pay attention here. And when we shift from this is bad or wrong, because when we're thinking about it as bad or wrong, it's like, okay, there's more feelings come up, like embarrassment, shame, you know, things like this, feeling like we're failing, things of this nature, to, okay, this is a signal. Let me take a look at it. I think like this is really probably one of the first steps in like getting out of like that downward, like internal spiral about it and getting ready to create a shift there.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to say, it's like, it reminds me of pain. I mean, obviously we don't like it when we feel physical pain, but obviously if we put our hand on a stovetop and it didn't burn and it didn't hurt, we would burn our whole hand off, right? So this experience, this feedback loop is providing us data that we need to pay attention to. And it gives us, it's just like that way in that signal, it's saying like, if you didn't feel anger when somebody, you know, just said something to you that was really harmful or hurtful, then you wouldn't have boundaries. If you were in a situation where someone stole from you, or it wouldn't teach you to be more cautious, or whatever the case may be. But whatever the scenarios, I could give out 10 to 15 scenarios, but whatever the case may be, anger is there to tell you something is going on. It's your signal. And that's the way I like to talk about it, particularly because you're never going to escape it. And the goal isn't to escape it. People will come to me and say like, I want to stop being angry. And I'm like, what? It's part of the human experience. We need to experience anger. It's good to experience anger, but we need to know how to manage it and how to navigate those feelings.
Thanks for saying this. That is part of the human experience. This is so important, especially when we think about parenting toddlers, because parenting a toddler really asks us to be with the full spectrum of human emotions. And there's a lot of emotions that we've been told by the way we were raised or by society that are bad or wrong, that make us really uncomfortable, that we sometimes try to push away, you know, anger, frustration, jealousy, these types of things. And so it can be really hard to be with those feelings and emotions in a child and teach them how to work through them if we're not able to sit with those feelings and emotions that we are having first and accept them there. And of course, this is not a one and done thing. And in some ways it's like, you know, peeling the layers back of an onion. And there, in some ways, I feel like it's a lifelong process because there's always going to be like a next layer, a next step, or a curveball that we didn't expect. And we have to come back to our equilibrium and things of that nature. But I just like to mention that, like, before we can expect ourselves to be able to be present with a child, a toddler that's having a hard time and needs us to help them re-regulate, we the practice starts with ourselves first.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when it comes to, I'm trying to think what I want to ask you next. So I know there are like some common traps that we can get stuck in with parenting anger and rage. And I think one of them, as you're saying, is like trying to escape it. Do you think that there are some other traps that we get stuck in that kind of prevents us in like diving in and learning to manage it?
Yes, I definitely think it's trying to escape the anger and rage or trying to make it go away is a trap we can get stuck in. I think there are some other beliefs, some distortions that maybe we latch onto that can also make this really challenging. One being that we believe that we are the only ones who experience it, and we don't recognize that this is actually a universal experience that many parents will go through. And then also assigning so much meaning to the feelings of anger that we have. And negative meaning, where we are telling ourselves, you know, I'm a monster for feeling this way, or I'm flawed for experiencing this. Or just keeping it a secret, not sharing it at all. You have somebody in your life that is, you know, supportive, non-judgmental, that you can share it with, but not sharing with them, or not going to seek therapy because the shame and the guilt of this experience just feels like it's too much. And when we live this secret, when we believe we can escape it, when we want to make it completely go away, when we start assigning meaning and believing really negative things about ourselves because of this experience, it just grows. The feeling doesn't go away. We start to respond. We're more reactive because now when we are so self-critical, we actually are fueling those feelings and that reactivity. So it can really be a big trap that parents will get themselves into.
Yeah. And so what are your tips in terms of starting to change our relationship with that anger and rage and starting to work through it and transform it?
Mm-hmm. I always tell clients that feelings are signals, no matter what they are. Emotions that we experience are signals. And just as we tell kids, like just as we tell parents to be curious about our child's behavior and why they are doing the things that they do and how they're doing the things that they're doing, we need to have that same curiosity for ourselves and say, like, okay, I noticed I was really angry earlier about this. What else could be going on? You know, what was that feeling that's below the iceberg? And for example, maybe your child is asking you to do, I don't know, maybe they're bringing up the something that you've already asked them to do something. They're stalling. My son just did this last night. He said it to me. He said, you know, I'm stalling, mommy. And I'm like, I understand that. I get that. And you might be, you're feeling more and more irritated and, but understanding what the need is underneath that anger. So what is that primary emotion that you're experiencing? Most of the time I find with parents is like, we feel inadequate. We feel like, God, I can't even manage this. Like there must be something wrong or flawed with me if I can't even, you know, do this one thing, whatever it is in parenting. Sometimes there's also, I'm just lonely. I haven't seen other people. I feel like I've been isolated for far too long and that is unbearable. So really getting to the root of what the primary emotion or need is, then we can tend to it. So when we want to address that rage, this is how we do it. We want to figure out what's underneath that root. But we might have a lot of physical needs. So we might have physical needs for space, sleep, nourishment, support, and they're not being tended to. So those are a lot of the unmet needs that need to be addressed. But there also might be a need to feel seen or validated. Maybe we feel like the load in parenthood isn't being shared and I'm doing more than my partner. And I'm noticing I'm feeling more irritable because of it. Cause I feel like I am having to ride the emotional wave of with my toddler. I'm having to do all the housework. I'm having to work outside of the home. I'm having to do all of these things. And it feels really unfair. So really addressing that with your partner or your support person and getting to the root of what's causing that, but also shifting our thinking patterns about ourselves and how we see ourselves. So it's really multi-layered. The physical needs that we have, some of those emotional or even relational needs that we have, but thinking also about like from a cognitive or mental perspective, like what am I saying about myself that's fueling this, that's making it worse, and making these small mental shifts. That's not like, it's, I don't expect it to be like rainbows and butterflies. You don't go from like, I'm a monster, I'm a terrible person, to like, I'm a great mother. You know, that doesn't always feel natural, but just to say like, this is hard right now. I'm struggling and You start to respond to yourself compassionately, like you would to somebody that you know that's in pain, instead of saying like, I'm, you know, not good enough because I'm struggling. It's like saying, I'm having a hard time and I just need some space, or I need some grace. I need more support. This is really challenging. And when you respond to yourself that way, it shifts everything. It shifts everything. So really getting to the root of what's going on there.
Yeah, I can see how this can be super helpful. And, you know, this idea of parents who were raised a certain way, and when we look back at childhood and like, okay, you know, maybe like I wasn't allowed to whine, I wasn't allowed to cry, or I was like told this was bad, or I got in trouble, or things like that. And so to be with a child's whining and crying is really challenging. Or if we were used to having someone yell at us, like that was the way it was modeled to like deal with frustration and anger. And I know that, you know, parents never want to yell at their child, and that yelling is like a byproduct or a symptom of like, you know, what happens when like the internal anger and frustration spills over. And so for parents who like really want to break the cycle of yelling, especially if they were raised by yellers, like what can they do to start moving past this?
I think validating that this is going to be challenging, and also acknowledging the hard work that you're doing, is like just a very great foundational piece. It's like, I'm choosing to do some things different. It's going to be hard. I'm swimming against the current, but I'm proud of myself for trying. Really acknowledging that piece, having these affirmations and mantras that you set out for yourself. One thing that sounds really simple, that's the hardest thing to do as a parent, is to exercise pause and to remind yourself that no response is better than a negative response. So our knee-jerk reaction might be to say like, I've told you this a million times, and you're noticing that elevation in your body, like your body's getting tense, your voice is starting, you want to just yell. But the pause button is really hard to activate if you have been in a system where people are really responsive, they yell, they become physical, and you're breaking a generational cycle. So it's like a muscle you would exercise at the gym. The more that you use it, the more that you try to activate it within your home, the better you'll be at this. So sometimes we feel like we have to solve everything right then and there. But I have found, even in my own parenting experience, being raised by yellers and my own set of dysfunction that we won't go into today, that just activating the pause and just saying like, okay, I don't need to respond to this right now. I just need to pause and really recognize and notice what is going on in your body, because your body is signaling to you that you are not well. When your shoulders are starting to creep up, when your jaw is getting tense, when your heart is starting to race, and you find like you are feeling yourself in this posture or position to where you want to respond or react in a way that you know you're going to regret later, just recognize that. And then have a couple of little skills in your pocket. I'm going to pause. I'm going to breathe, and I'm going to drop my shoulders. I'm going to loosen up my jaw. And I'm going to continue just breathing while I'm here. Or, you know, am I going to have to do something like one skill? Like, I'm just going to notice what my body feels like, and I'm going to use like progressive muscle relaxation, tightening of my fists, letting them go, tightening of my fists, letting them go, and feeling what that tension and then that relaxation feels like in my hands. We really have to develop skills, because we are not going to have these skills initially. And pausing is going to feel like it is absolutely impossible. So we want to pay attention to our body. We want to use the skills that we have to relax our body. And we want to develop good affirmations and mantras about, you know, the good work that we're trying to do. But we also want to reframe what's happening in the moment. We want to remember that kids are kids. This is hard, especially if we were raised in an environment where we've heard kids are manipulative. We've heard kids are, they're doing this on purpose. They are trying to get under your skin. And when you believe that, you are going to be activated. You are going to be on edge. You are going to want to retaliate. So really telling yourself, okay, my kid's having a hard time right now. Could it be that they're hungry? Could it be that they are overstimulated? And when you really reframe what's going on in the moment, it's easier to offer compassion. But even greater than that, when we offer ourselves compassion, we can extend that compassion. So Just reminding ourselves, our kids are operating from their own developmental skill set. We need to praise ourselves for doing this work. We need to learn skills to really calm and relax our bodies. And that is, these are just a couple of steps of how we can break this cycle, when, especially when we've been in a system where people have been yelling or doing whatever it is that does not align with your values as a parent. So those are just a few things. I could go on and on all day.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yes, there's so much there. I'm curious, do you or your clients have a few like favorite skills that you like to share? Like, I know I have some, and I feel like it's like super personal, right? Like what works for me is not going to work for you, because, well, we're all unique individuals. I think sometimes it's fun hearing like some of the ways, some of the like positive coping skills that people, you know, use to really, to get grounded in these moments where we just want to explode.
Absolutely. I use three myself. And so if you want to just go get right in there. I typically will wear a watch. I'm not wearing it today because I was afraid it was going to go off and make noise. I will use my watch, and I will use it kind of like as biofeedback. So I will start to practice deep breathing and see how my heart rate can start to decrease. And that is something I've done for years, where I will put on my watch and I will practice deep breathing. The whole art of deep breathing is not how long you can hold your breath, but it's just this inhale and then the slow exhale of your breath on your own count, whatever feels comfortable. I don't want you to pass out. But what you do is you will imagine that there's a balloon in your belly, and with each inhale, you are inflating that balloon. And then you hold it at the top, and then you exhale slowly. I actually teach my son these skills. These are great skills. But as I'm doing that, and as I will try to get myself to breathe, and I will do this with him, especially if I am really dysregulated and he's really dysregulated, I'm like, join me. Let's do this together. You know, let's do this together. And we will do some deep breathing together. And I like to use my watch, like I said, as biofeedback. So I'm just that kind of person that likes to see things work and happen. And when it does, and I find that my body's calming down, I feel so much better. And it just has a positive impact on my mental health. Another thing I will do is use physical grounding, where if I am overstimulated or if I'm dysregulated, whether this is in the presence of my child, my partner, whatever the case may be, I will just focus on a couple of my senses. You can focus on any one of your senses. I personally like my sense of touch and my sense of hearing, because it's easier for me. For some people that doesn't work, but I will, like if I have something in my hand, like a pencil, I will hold it and I will try to describe it to myself. If it were a spoon, whatever you're doing, you're just trying to describe this to yourself in your mind and ground yourself in the moment with your senses. If you're sitting in a chair, you're going to tell yourself, what does it feel like for this chair to meet my thighs and my bottom? Because I haven't been paying attention. It's kind of been on autopilot. So what does it feel like where this chair meets my back, where it meets my bottom, where my feet meet the ground? And you're kind of describing it to yourself in your mind. And this will help you just be present in the moment and regulate. And then the last thing I will do, I kind of just teased this earlier, is like a progressive muscle relaxation exercise, where you will tense a muscle, for example, your fist, you'll tense your fist and release. And you're becoming aware of what that tension and then relaxation is like. So if you were going to tense up your shoulders, you would do the same thing. And then you would relax them. And then you would be paying attention to what those, that shift in sensation is like. And I actually have, this is a free resource I offer. I'm like, is it on my website? I'm pretty sure it's on my website, where I will walk people through a lot of these skills. So I'm a big proponent of relaxation strategies and grounding and mindfulness strategies. So we want to just pick those little snippets of what works for us in the moment we can do to regulate ourselves when we are finding that parenting is overwhelming.
I love this. And I love this idea of the watch. I haven't thought of this one before. And I love the idea of like getting to see like real-time feedback and lowering your heart rate, because for someone like me, who like a lot of my like frustration comes from like the perceived lack of control. And I know that there's a lot of toddler parents that feel that way, right? Because you can't control another human being, and as much as you want to, and it's a hard transition from like being like in a flow with a baby who normally just kind of goes along with most things to like a toddler who has their own agenda. And so I just love this idea of like being able to like focus on something. The way I hear it is like focusing on something you can control, and working on lowering your heart rate is something that you can work on and control. And I think it's a great way to like meet that need that feels unmet in some of these moments of just anger and frustration.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm very much, that was a challenge for me when I became a parent, like order, control, expectations. And you have a kid and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't manage any of this. There is a whole human with their own set of emotions. And it felt really tangible to hold on to that and say, I'm feeling really elevated. Let me watch this decrease. So that's just, those are just a few that work for me. There could be a library of options, but those are just a couple that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I love those. That's awesome. So what advice do you have for parents that say, okay, they're working to create that pause. They're working to employ some of these skills. And sometimes we're going to be human beings and mm-hmm. we're learning, and we're still, that anger, frustration, and rage is going to spill over from our internal selves to the external world, and we're going to yell. And so how do you, what advice do you have for parents who really have this knee jerk and automatic reaction, because it's going to happen still during the learning process. It's not going to look perfect. And, just feel that like regret and like, like I just took 10 steps back and I'm so mad at myself type of situation.
Mm-hmm. I will say you're human and welcome to parenthood. No. Truly, I mean, as a psychologist myself, I have regretful parenting moments. And I'm always like, oh, I should have known better. I should have done better. And we all are going to have those moments. So I want to say that this is a part of the experience and truly a part of every single relationship. I mean, have you said things to your partner, your family, your friends that you're like, I shouldn't have said that way. That didn't come off how I really intended it to. And you regret it later. It's a part of pretty much every single relationship. I will say, if you find this to become like a really cyclical process where it's happening so regularly that you are fearing that rupture in the relationship, and then maybe you are, if it's any ever becoming violent, or you're acting in a way that scares you or your family, your child, your partner, just get help. I'm a proponent for therapy. I think we all can use therapy. I don't think there ever is anything that's, you shouldn't see a therapist for. You could see a therapist for anything, but I challenge you to go seek therapist immediately, because you want to get to the root of why this is happening and at that frequency. Now, if you are finding like, I am having these scenarios, but I'm worried about like how this is impacting my relationship with my child, this is a common thing that comes up, and we can expect rupture and repair in our relationships. I think that you will know yourself about like the frequency and the severity of those ruptures where you're thinking like, okay, I think it's time for me to go talk to somebody. But I will say, this is, like I said, a part of most relationships. And the best thing that we can do is repair with our children, where we acknowledge our responsibility and our part in what has gone on, when we apologize and we make things right and we make a commitment to change. And imagine like any relationship in a friendship, if your friend messed up big time and they came to you and they said, you know what? I really didn't like the way I talked to you yesterday. And I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that way. And, I'm really going to work on being a better friend to you and not saying those things, and thinking of your feelings first before I speak, whatever, however they approached it to you. You have more respect for your friend, right? And you are able to mend that and move forward. And that can really happen in most relationships, so long as it's not like a continued pattern of behavior. We don't want this to be like, I'm coming back every day, doing the same thing, rupturing and repairing that with that frequency, because people will start to call our bluff. So we want to make sure that we are taking to heart what's gone on. We're making the necessary repairs. But if we need more support, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And it might be because there's some underlying feelings of depression or anxiety, or it's because of this acute sleep deprivation that we're experiencing. And we really want to know and recognize, okay, what's at the root of this? So that's with that disclaimer, with that caveat, I would say we all are going to have these moments. We all will. I do. And after every single time, I'm like, oh, again, I said I wasn't going to do this, you know, and here I am. So I get it. And you are not alone.
Yeah. We're humans. We're human beings. And we are going to experience the full spectrum of emotions. We're going to have knee-jerk reactions from time to time. And again, like, repairing is so important. And it makes me come back to like this idea of like focusing on what we can control and taking the opportunity to repair the relationship. Not only, you know, repairs and recreates that connection there, but also models to your child what to do in these very human moments that sometimes when we do lose control of ourselves. And so there can be like a learning experience in front of it. And every time you do this, you're modeling this social skill and this life skill to your child every time you decide to repair the relationship. And also, I want to thank you for talking about the importance of getting extra support and help if this is like something recurring or it just feels like too big. Do you have any other advice on like who to reach out to or when that would be appropriate?
Absolutely. I honestly think anytime you're wondering if it's time to seek therapy, it's time. I always tell my clients, I always tell the people I meet with, anytime I'm teaching a workshop, any class, any in the community, I always tell people that it's never too soon or too early to seek therapy. And you don't want to wait until you're in crisis to find a provider. If you are in this perinatal space, whether you're pregnant, you're postpartum, you're a few years postpartum, and you really want to find somebody, I would say, that has experience with the perinatal time period, because they are going to have the training to know how to address this and to help you through this. And it's not going to be a scary thing for them to deal with, because they know exactly what this is, what it's called, and the most up-to-date and researched strategies to address this. So I would go to Postpartum Support International's website, which is postpartum.net. And they have a directory of providers globally that you can find in your geographic region that are trained particularly with all the perinatal mood and anxiety disorders and all the challenges that parents deal with as they transition to parenthood. So I highly suggest checking them out. Not only they have one-on-one therapy, they have resources for support groups that are free and virtual. They have prescribers, but if you also have like a prescriber that you are very familiar with and comfortable with, they can consult with them as well. So there's just it's just a robust resource that I highly recommend.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And, you know, as we start to wrap up here and we think about, you know, the parents and caregivers watching who are like, okay, I'm ready to start taking some steps to really transform the anger and rage that I'm experiencing. I'm a little bit nervous. It seems like a lot, and it's hard to know where to start to make that 1% change and just to, you know, create that first tiny stepping stone towards what we envision. Where would you recommend, what action step would you recommend to get started today whenever they're done watching?
So this is, oh, there's so many, but when we talk about this, and I actually explain this in my course, All the Rage. Most of the time we are so reactive and we're in the moment and we want to know like, okay, I've done this now. How do I repair? How do I fix this? Or what do I do in the moment when I'm seeing red? But I want to take it all the way a step back. And we want to think of it from like the outside perspective. What do I do outside of those moments to take care of myself? Because what we do outside of the moment to take care of ourselves is equally, if not more important, because it's kind of like bubble wrap. It's like, we are fragile. We are, you know, already doing so much as parents, but what we do outside of the moment is like we bubble wrap and protect ourselves so that we don't break and fall apart. So there's a number of things. We think of, how am I nourishing myself? Am I exercising or moving my body? Am I getting adequate sleep? Am I getting time for myself? Am I getting the right kind of support? And the more that we're able to fill those needs that we talked about that can often be at the root of the anger and the frustration that we're experiencing, the more that we're able to tend to ourselves and have that space, the less reactive we find that we are. Like, when we are caring for our whole self, we are able to manage those moments because we have the bandwidth we have the resources emotionally, physically, whatever the case may be, because we've been nourishing ourselves or nurturing ourselves. So think about just from that perspective of what are my needs for nourishment, for movement, for sleep, for time, for a space or support. Am I getting zero right now? What's one thing I can work on? What's one thing there that really helps me to feel more balanced or more like myself? Is it going for a walk regularly? These are just random examples. That doesn't have to be it. But whatever it is for you that nourishes you, that makes you feel more like yourself, more, you know, fulfilled, then you can respond in a way to your family that feels good, feels better.
So I love this idea of bubble wrap. Like this, I love it. Like, you know, and sometimes it can feel challenging to, you know, take the time. I'm always like in a time starved mindset. Like that's one of my like major like mindset shifts and mindset like work that I do personally. And so when I'm in that time starved mindset, it can just feel like there's no time to even do like this one thing, you know, for myself. And sometimes then I have to like remind myself, okay, you can like take a 10-minute bath instead of like a 5-second shower, you know, like you can do that. And that's just one example, but I think this idea of thinking of it as bubble wrap, like I'm almost picturing, like pieces of bubble wrap and like taping it to myself. And like every time I do, you know, one of these small things to take care of myself and meet my need, it's like taping another piece of bubble wrap to myself. I like that
idea. Yes. And honestly, this stuff shifts. So like in every season and stage, these look different. I remember when my, when I was like in the first few months postpartum, what did that look like for me? It looked like I would go for a stroller walk because it was like maybe my son would be quiet in the stroller. So it felt like a break. And I would plug in a podcast that I enjoyed that was just purely for my own, you know, satisfaction. I wasn't learning anything. It was like something I would enjoy. And I would take him for a walk and it felt like, whew, I got a little bit of a break. It felt like I was interacting with somebody, although I wasn't. And then then sometimes it would be during his micro nap, like, can I move my body in a way that felt good in my living room? And it would get interrupted sometimes, and that would be frustrating, but it evolves. And then the next step is like, wow, maybe now we're able to go to the gym together because I can drop you off at the childcare without you screaming your head off. And then we can do that. And now, hey, guess what? I get 30 to 45 minutes. And with every stage and season, it looks very different. So I don't want to like make it sound like it's always going to be easy or something that you can just do. We do have to use our creativity to figure out like, how do I make this work for myself? But I deserve to make this work for myself, because if I don't, I know what the result is. I know how terrible I'm going to feel. So it's different at each stage, and know that it will shift.
Yes. And you just reminded me when you said, how can I do this? It just reminded me of like this, one of the most important mindset shifts I feel that's like just really important around this is moving from, I can't do this, I can't take time for myself, I can't do this thing for myself, to how can I? Because we go from not having possibility to having possibility, from there just being no way and the door being closed to problem solving and having the door be open. And I just think that that is probably a key mindset shift that I keep focused on, that I work with my clients on, that doesn't just, it applies in so many areas of parenting and life, and also getting our needs met as well.
Mm-hmm. I can't, but how can I? No, totally.
Yeah. I love it. Well, our time's coming to a close, and I know you have a gift that you'd like to offer our audience. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes, absolutely. Something that we brought up is this idea of when we rupture and what we do. And so many parents will ask me this, like, am I ruining my kid? What if I've done this? Like, where do I go from here? And I want to let you know that it's part of the process, but I do have an absolutely free masterclass called the 3-step method for repairing with your child after you lose your cool. And it is a thorough masterclass. It's like a workshop where I walk through the steps and exactly what you do, the language that you can use, what's appropriate for what age group. So I highly recommend you check it out. It's absolutely free.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And do you have any final thoughts you want to share with us before we go?
Can't think of anything else.
Awesome.
I could go on all day.
Right? But there's so many things, right? And so many more topics. And I feel like we're going to come back next year and talk about just a whole nother aspect of our emotions and parenting. That is for sure. Before we go, where can our audience just go to learn more?
Yes. So I am Psyched Mommy, if you didn't know that already, on all social media platforms and Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, all the places. And my website has a completely free blog where I tackle pretty much every single mental health topic or challenge that you could be experiencing that I highly recommend people check out. And it also has free resources like some of those relaxation techniques I told you about. But we are going to be offering one-on-one therapy services and growing across the US. So just stay tuned and we will keep you updated on where, what, why, how you can find the resources that you need. So we're going to be doing that and providing one-on-one care for parents.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the work that you're doing in the world. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your expertise and your commitment to helping parents and in return children and just, you know, making everyone's lives better with your contribution.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And for everyone else who's watching, we will see you again soon. Okay. Bye.